This afternoon, you and I are sitting in a building because of Fort Campbell. A building that means much to our community. A building that was constructed by the federal government to serve as a USO, United Services Organization, for $75,000. Imagine what it would cost to build it today. The government used it as a USO for the community to serve the soldier boys at Camp Campbell, as they were called, until 1946, when the USO closed and the building was put on the market. And Rotarians Walter Mundy and several others went to Washington to negotiate the purchase of this $75,000 building for use on the part of the community. Paying price, $9,500. One of the greatest real estate deals that was ever struck by anybody here in Hooterville. And so in 47, the War Memorial Commission opened the building. And since that time, it's been the site of countless events, not the least of which is our Rotary Auction, which is about to come up. Well, I want to talk to you a little bit about Camp Campbell / Fort Campbell as it deals with Christian County and Hopkinsville. Back in 1941, a seed was planted in this community by the Chamber of Commerce in the hope that we might get a military installation nearby. The same was done in Clarksville. And so the War Department, as the Defense Department was known in those days, became involved in it, and three sites were considered for use as an armored training camp. One was at Camp Tyson, Tennessee, northeast of Paris on the Tennessee River. It had been a balloon barrage training camp in the 1930s. The second site was Pinerol State Park. The third, and the one selected, was over 100,000 acres lying along the Kentucky-Tennessee line in the Tennessee counties of Stewart and Montgomery and the Kentucky counties of Trigg and Christian. And so, in 41, work got underway. First of all, they came with a survey party to look over the feasibility of using this particular area. The leadership in Hopkinsville and Clarksville both, the political, the government leadership, was strongly in favor of it to a point. As you can always imagine, everything has to a point. And as work progressed on the site survey, some of the local leaders began to get cold feet at the idea of such a large military base being built right at our side door. And so that began a series of events in the life of Hopkinsville that would finally terminate in a crisis that brought down our city commission form of government. In 1952, our town was managed by three city commissioners. And one of those city commissioners, Joe Davis, was in cahoots with the police chief, James Greenfield, followed by Greenwell, a name known to a number of you. And in time, it developed that General Wayne C. Smith, the commanding general at Camp Campbell, would declare Hopkinsville off limits. And that remained so for 2 or 3 years. Once that hurdle was passed, our community went to work and continues to try to build a good and a better relationship with Fort Campbell. Thankfully, there's some parts of history we just as soon let lie buried, and that is one of them for sure. Well, the camp was developed. A move-out date of June 1st, 1942 was announced for all of the farm families living in the cantonment area of that four-county region. Now, this was a problem, believe it or not, to a lot of Christian Countyans who were 4 and 5 and even 6 generation farmers on the same land. And you can well imagine how they were reluctant to give up that land. but it was finally done. The 104,000 acres was acquired by the U.S. government for $4 million, and the average price for the land was $37 an acre. Now, some of that land was not very good, I'll admit. The top price for the top grade of land was $67 an acre. And so the farmers who went out to buy land elsewhere found land starting at $125 an acre. And this got to be quite a problem for the move-out families. And for the rest of their lives, they bore grudge, rightly so, about having to move out under those financial circumstances. Well, in the summer of 1942, 11,000 men picked up hammers and saws and screwdrivers, nails and lumber, and built the town part, the cantonment area of Camp Campbell. It consisted to prepare for two armored divisions of barracks, mess halls, motor pools, streets, utilities, an airport, a 1,500-bed hospital, and several chapels, and a town was born. The first cadre of troops arrived from Fort Knox in September of 1942. And among that group was a man a few of you will remember, the late attorney Paul Hale. And so there came the question of naming the camp. Alvin Barkley, U.S. Senator, spoke from this platform right here on a number of occasions, called upon it to be named for some Kentuckian, and he proposed several names. Interestingly enough, most of them ex-Confederates. J. Percy Priest of Tennessee proposed the name that was selected. Colonel William Bowen Campbell from Lebanon, Tennessee, who was the originator of that slogan, "Follow me, boys," in a battle in the Mexican War. And so it became Camp Campbell, Tennessee. Well, that hackled Alvin Barkley, and he said to J. Percy Priest, according to the tradition, "You got the name, but damned, we're going to have the post office designation." And so for a time, believe it or not, the camp was known as Camp Campbell, Tennessee/Kentucky. Where but in America would you find a situation like that with a military base straddling a state line and bearing the designation of two states for the post office? Finally, in late 1942, the Tennessee was dropped in the agreement between Priest and Barkley, and the name Campbell was chosen. Now, immediately, this community dived into a massive effort to assist in the development of Camp Campbell, which much of that effort, community-wise, centered around this building. And women in particular, sorry men, but it was principally the women, working through the Red Cross and other agencies that went to work to put together a community home away from home for the soldier boys from nearby Camp Campbell. And so they could come here for recreation, for entertainment, for food, for movies, for telephone calls, and remember, our modern day of communication was yet undreamed of. And so this community turned out in force to put together a place the boys could come to riding by bus from Camp Campbell to the bus station up here on 9th Street to come to the Memorial Building to have a little bit of a taste of home away from home. As the summer of 43 emerged, the community instituted street dances. And Dink Embry was one of the band players who talked to us about 9th and Main being cordoned off for street dances at night for the soldier boys at Camp Campbell. Now, quite naturally, the girls of Hopkinsville turned out as well, sometimes not to the pleasure of their fathers. because interestingly enough, many of Hopkinsville fathers thought that those soldier boys at Camp Campbell weren't good enough for their girls. Well, that attitude finally subsided, and we've talked to many people who have discussed these downtown street dances that were held at night. There were some other things that happened here, too. Long before streaking became a national pastime on college campuses, there was an example of streaking in Hopkinsville. At the corner of 5th and Main stood the old Main Hotel. And a soldier boy got a room there one night, procured the services of a young lady. She proceeded to reduce him to his birthday clothes and then put a gun on him and chased him down the steps. This is all on the front page of the Kentucky New Era. I didn't make it up. And the police in suit finally caught him, strip stark naked, right in the middle of the intersection of 9th and Main. So we had an example of streaking right there long before it became a national pastime. Christmas 1943. The troop strength at Camp Campbell was 100,000. They were preparing for Operation Overlord, D-Day. With 100,000 troops at Camp Campbell, the local girls were in ecstasy. The local boys were mad as hell at all the competition. There's a story involving a well-known political figure in those days, Dr. Frank Bassett, county court clerk. Anybody in local politics has heard of that name, haven't they? And so the story goes that one Sunday morning, a young couple walked from the bus station out to Dr. Bassett's home on Alumni Avenue, knocked at the front door, and wanted to procure marriage license. Dr. Bassett put them in his car, took them down to the courthouse, opened it, gave them the license, as he did for many military couples. And he asked them if they had a preacher. No, we don't have a preacher. So he called his Presbyterian minister, who came down to the courthouse and married them. And then Dr. Bassett said, well, what are you going to do about a honeymoon? And the boy said, well, we've got a 3-day pass. And Dr. Bassett said, well, you don't have a car, and you probably don't have much money. So here's $50. Can you imagine $50 during World War II? And he said, and here's my car. I just ask you to take me home, and you take my car on your honeymoon and just be back here Sunday night. Dr. Bassett walked in. His wife confronted him about what he had done with a reminder that he'd probably never see that car again. And they claimed that Dr. Bassett said to Miss Mamie, oh, Mamie, have you forgotten? Sunday night, the car was back. The next Christmas, a young lady knocked at the door. Dr. Bassett went to the door. It was that bride of the previous summer. And with tear-filled eyes, she said to him, I just want to thank you for what you did, because my husband gave his life on the beachhead at Normandy. And so that's just one little footnote of what life was like in Hopkinsville with the people who gave more than the full measure of devotion. Well, World War II finally came to an end, and I haven't mentioned the German prisoners of war. We had several hundred of them, which your granddaddy hired, to work in the field, and they were sent out with tomato sandwiches, and your grandmother probably cooked something extra on the stove for them. And there's a cemetery at Fort Campbell where at least five of these German POWs who died here during the war are buried. There have been reunions between those farm families and some of those German POWs since the war. After the war, the big news out of Camp Campbell was not only the renaming of it as a permanent base to Fort Campbell, but also the best kept secret ever developed in Hopkinsville. In 1949, the U.S. government determined to build the birdcage. It's over the line in Montgomery County. You've heard many stories about the birdcage, but your forebears heard very little about it while it was under construction. The story is told of a laborer riding a bus back into town, and a man struck up conversation with him and asked him what he was doing. He said, "I'm working on a top secret mission at the camp." And the inquiring fellow pulled out his badge and fired him right there on the spot. And so generally the public knew a little bit, but they knew more importantly to keep their mouths shut about what was going on at Fort Campbell, as the building of a storage facility for first atomic weapons brought in here by rail, can you believe it, over the Tennessee Central Railroad down to Fort Campbell. That facility continued until 1965. And I would remind you that that was just past the Cuban Missile Crisis, which a number of us are certainly old enough to remember. So in 1950, the camp became a fort, with the 11th Airborne Division headquartered here. But then quite a change would come, and that's the subject in dealing with the young people in our community now about the 101st Airborne Division, who have been permanently headquartered at Fort Campbell since 1956. You and I know, with this auction and everything else, that people and events make a difference. So it is with the 101st Airborne Division. From its activation in the summer of 44, through that famous usage of the word nuts at Bastogne, when the German officer asked the American, "What does that mean?" And the American officer responded, "It means for you to go to hell." And so from Bastogne to Vietnam, this division represents hard work and dedication on the part of thousands of soldiers. It was a time that the division progressed from airborne to air mobile to air assault. In World War II, the 101st were the first Americans to land on the beaches at Normandy, and from there on into Holland and Operation Market Garden. The 101st Airborne arrived at Fort Campbell in the spring of 1956. And in September of that year, the colors were presented and the Screaming Eagles of the 101st Airborne Division were activated. And then came Vietnam, the deployment to Vietnam in 1965, returning in 1972. The Screaming Eagles fought from Saigon into Cambodia. And then there was the Gulf War, in which they were involved in 1991. And the 101st, as you know, led Desert Storm into Iraq. And so the troops returned to Fort Campbell after the Middle Eastern campaign. Once again, more warmly welcomed this time than coming home from Vietnam, as you know. And so our community not only owes a debt of gratitude to the 101st Airborne Division, but also to the existence of our neighbor 16 miles to the south, Fort Campbell. We owe a great debt of gratitude to those young men and women who have gone out to fight that you and I may sit and enjoy one another's fellowship and get the job done without fear. One soldier put it this way: vision is more than eyesight. It is a commitment to purpose. And that's what you and I bear as we go into this auction in the coming days. Thanks for putting up with me.